Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah Davis, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Presbyterian Congregation, Mount Zion, at the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hills, Texas. Today is August 9, 2016, or it is Elu 7, 2020. I will start my first service today with a song that I have written entitled, Lead Me to the Rock That Is Higher Than I. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I, I'll forever be. Indebted to the sun and the very one who came to set me free. For the life of the soul I have to live, this blood is getting strong. For the greater heights I have to attain, it's never done alone. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock, lead me to the rock that's higher than I. Lead me to the place that the bird is free, lead me to the mountains in the sky. A man on a mission came to this world, saw the phone the slung. Phone in a major and scarcely a stranger, did the same passing by. The moon comes back with the heavenly lights of all the starry hosts. For the brightest one who loved them all is the one that guards them most. Lead me to the rock that is higher than none. Lead me to the sun that's better than the sky. Lead me in the path by the river of life. Lead me to the mountain of the sun. Mission came to this world, sort of on a slum. Born in a manger and scarcely a stranger could be seen passing by. For the moon shone bright, just the heavenly lights of all the stars we hold. For the brightest one of them all, the one that marked the moon. For the star pointed to the newborn king as he lay in the manger. Descended of the one created from the Adam's race. As the time goes on, many stories are told about the man and the gal of who changed the water into the wine and the blind to see. For this is a man for all kinds of one whom men come to rely on. By the witness of many merry toads before their eyes. Oh, and it is down, and it rose again with the victory over the grave. With the proven must and for all, he has the power to save. Lead me to the rock that is higher than the sun. Lead me to the sun that never runs dry. Lead me in the path by the river of the light. Lead me to the path of the sky. Don't leave me in the desert, barren and dry, and wait forever and every time. Brother, lead me to the mountain that never runs dry. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. Oh yes, lead me to those mansions in the sky. But part three of Judgment beginning in 1970 by Brother Philip Johnson. We're on page three of his track. We're still dealing with the subject of who is this Assyrian and what brings his downfall. Okay, so the Assyrian must be then in charge of the house of Israel and masquerading as a true leader in Israel.
Otherwise, why would we have to have a judgment to bring him down and get him out of the way? All right, it says, who is this Assyrian and what brings his downfall? 1 TTR 24, page 17, brings to view some facts on this subject. Two people are brought to view in the church. So now, since he said two people are brought to view in the church, when we have to go to Matthew 24, where it talks about those two dissimilar servants. The one that is good and the one that is bad, that are vying for the leadership. So anyway, it said that he has chosen a new husbandman. This is your key. So a new husbandman must mean then that the kingdom had already been set up then with the husbandman. And so we can read about those husbandmen there in Matthew and Luke 19. So it says that they are his covenant Abrahamic keeping people. Okay, now it says, those who render, restore him the fruits, feast in their season. Now the first, in order for one to restore, there would have to be something that originally was established and torn down, and then someone comes along and restores that which has been torn down. So that's what this new husbandman is for. Now in Isaiah 49:6 it says, and he said, it is a light thing that thou shouldest be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to restore the preserved of Israel. And I will also give thee for a light unto the Gentiles, that thou mayest be my salvation unto the end of the earth. Okay, now, this restore means that something that has been preserved a long time ago, and he's going to raise somebody up in the last days to restore that which has been preserved of Israel. Okay, this is what we're dealing with. That's what this husbandman is all about. He said, a new husbandman, someone that will restore the preserved of Israel, that they are his covenant Abrahamic keeping people. Those who render or restore him the fruits, a feast in their season. There's a point of time, Leviticus 23. In other words, to restore the Levitical system. Well, Brother Johnson restored the Levitical system in 1970. And he established the Abrahamic covenant with his church. Okay? So he established the fruits in their season. There's a point of time, Leviticus 23, in other words, to restore the Levitical system, the divine plan of salvation, that these witnesses are numbered among spiritual Israel, SDA, to them shall be fulfilled all the covenant promises made by Yahweh unto his ancient people. So those that reserve, that restore the preserved of Israel. So those that are called to restore the preserved of Israel are the ones that we're talking about here, that he put in charge of his kingdom. In other words, he restores the Levitical system, the divine plan of salvation, that these witnesses are numbered among spiritual Israel, SDA, to them will be fulfilled all the covenant promises made by Yahweh and his ancient people. Revelation 7:1-8 shows that The numbered ones are the 144,000 Israelites from the Seventh-day Adventist Church, with 12,000 from each of the tribes, therefore fulfilling the word, "These are witnesses for Elohim are numbered among spiritual Israel," SGA. So Brother Johnson is writing this in 1970, and he's saying this is the judgment of the living beginning in 1970. He is now writing about the 144,000 that he says has been assigned to his church. And so that means then he's in charge of the tribe of Judah, the lawgiver. And the tribe of Judah is in charge of the 12 tribes of Israel. So then Brother Johnson would need to declare himself. He should have declared himself then at that very time that I am of the tribe of Judah, sitting upon the throne of David, ruling over the 12 tribes of Israel. Because it's exactly what the type calls for here in the Antitype, for this antitypical Elijah David to sit in that seat of Moses, which is the throne of David, in the house of Yahweh, which is the tribe of Judah, where the house of Yahweh is located. That's where it says, what is their work? Today, the church is free to carry forward to completion the divine plan of the salvation of a lost race. And so, he's got a preposition of. There's a better preposition. It should say salvation for a lost race, not of a lost race. Proverbs 27:14. What is this divine plan? While Moses in the mount, Elohim presented unto him not only the tables of law, but also the plan of salvation. Patriarchs and Prophets 3:32. Deuteronomy 4:14 shows that the plan of the salvation given unto Moses was the statutes and judgment. These statutes, laws of the sanctuary, were recorded by Moses in Leviticus 23. Psalms 105, verse 8 to 10 brings to view that the Levitical system was first given unto Abraham as a covenant for a period of 1,000 generations. And since there were only 42 generations from Abraham to Yahshua, shows that it was impossible for the Levitical laws to have been nailed to the cross, as there were still remaining 958 generations to be fulfilled. This same covenant was given by an oath unto Isaac and confirmed as the same unto Jacob for a law and unto Israel for an everlasting covenant. For the whole system of types and symbols for the compacted prophecy of the gospel, a presentation of which were bound up the promises of the redemption, Acts the Apostles 14:1. The record shows that this covenant was being tampered with and a false system of worship was set to take its place beginning in the 3rd century and onward by the Roman Catholic Church. The power symbolized by the little horn desolates the sanctuary and halts its regular ritual services. But afterwards, a period of 2,300 days, the sanctuary is to be cleansed or restored into its rightful state. For the additional information is given that the abomination that makes it desolate is substituted for the deity. Since the deity designates the divinely ordained system of worship, the power that removes it stands in the opposition unto Yahweh, and the abomination that makes it desolate represents the counterfeit system of worship. SGA Bible Dictionary, Volume 8, page 242. Since Daniel saw in vision that the little horn would halt and trample the Sabbath and sanctuary truth, the divinely ordained system of worship, Leviticus 23, to the ground, he was concerned about how long before it be restored. The sanctuary laws put back into force when he heard one saint speaking, another saint said unto a certain saint, which spake, how long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice? and the transgression of desolation, to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden under foot. And he said it unto me, under 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary repent. Daniel 8:13-14. As the Daniel 8:14 met fulfillment at the atonement, 10th day of the 7th month, 1844, what part of the divinely ordained sanctuary system was to be restored, reestablished at that time? Let us turn to Daniel 9:24-27. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city. And after 62 weeks shall the Messiah be cut off, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. And in the midst of the week he shall call the sacrifice and the oblation of the city. As Yahweh does not contradict himself, we are compelled to seek for a better understanding. Daniel 8:14 tells us that the sanctuary laws were to be restored in 1844. In the Seventh-day Adventist Bible Commentary, Volume 8, page 242, also teaches that it should have been restored then. Daniel 9:27 shows that the sacrificial offerings and services were removed from the sanctuary system at the crucifixion. Therefore, the sanctuary system laws without the sacrifices were to be restored in 1844. But only two of the sanctuary laws Sabbaths were restored at that time. Number one, the Atonement Sabbath, 10th day of the 7th month of Leviticus 23:27, was restored October 22, 1844. Number two, the 7th day Sabbath was restored in 1845. With the correct time to start the Sabbath, sundown, given 10 years later. But how about the rest of the sanctuary laws, the Sabbath? Well, the Yahweh attempted to restore these laws in 1888-1890 through the message of Yahshua, or righteousness, by Jones and Wagner. But the message was rejected then, and 1930, Elohim's voice again cried out in the city to the shepherd rod. Message, hear ye the rod and who hath appointed. The antitype of Moses with the rod, thus the law of Moses again was given. It too was rejected by the church. These messages came in the direct fulfillment of the prophetic history in the antitype. Also in 1970, in direct fulfillment of the prophetic history, Elohim brought forth the creation calendar, a correct time instrument to restore, reestablish the remaining trodden underfoot sanctuary law, Sabbath, upon the correct astronomical time. For the history which the great I Am has marked in his word, uniting link after link in the prophetic chain, from eternity in the past to eternity in the future, tells us where we are today in the possession of the ages and what may be expected in the time to come. All that prophecy has foretold as can come to pass until the present time has been traced on the pages of history. We may be assured that all which is yet to come will be fulfilled in this order. Education 178.3. While men have slept, Satan has been steadily sowing the terror. Let the wise now lift up their voices like a trumpet and give the message which is present truth for this time. Let them know where we are in the prophetic history. Eugene Hill, January 1, 1889. Since 1970 was the beginning of the marking of Ezekiel 9, investigated judgment of the living in the house of Yahweh, 1 Peter 4:17. Through this process, all will be prepared for the separation as called for in the Matthew 13:30. That both grow together until the harvest, and in the time of the harvest, I will say to the reapers, gather ye together first the tares, violators of the law of Moses, and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat of those who obey the law of Moses into my barn, kingdom. Okay, so Brother Johnson saying it as of 1970, that the beginning of the our marking of Ezekiel 9 and investigated Jared again. So it began at the house of Yahweh. Well, that was a Gilead center then. That's where the investigative judgment was going on. And maybe that's the reason why we had an atonement year after year. It's because we had the judgment for the living beginning with the house of Esau, which was supposed to have the first opportunity to do well, as Esau, the firstborn of Isaac, was a type. Then when Esau was born, he had to grow up for 30 years to become 30 years old before he could be blessed to receive his father's inheritance. So likewise, Brother Johnson had to have 30 years added to 1970 to grow up in the message of the Isaac branch, also to be anointed and to be given his blessing to receive the blessing of the birthright in the year 2000, in which when the year 2000 came, Brother Johnson did not receive the blessing for the birthright. Instead, he had it deferred or taken from him and given to his younger brother, Jacob, and that was myself, right there at the atonement of 1999, which closed out 30 years of Brother Johnson's ministry at Kerman, Texas. So the investigative judgment for the house of Esau started in 1970, according to Brother Sutter Johnson, and it ended at the atonement 2000, and changing the blessing from antitypical Esau to antitypical Jacob, and given the house of Isaac in a 3.5-year period to produce a purified section of the Isaac branch movement of the 11th hour, and that would be Mount Zion at the 12th hour with Elijah David in charge, starting at the Passover 2002 and ending at Atonement of 2002. So, this counterfeit system, abomination, let's continue to read now, the false feast days, which took the place of the divinely ordained system of Leviticus 23, has been set up where it ought not, in the church. Okay. So, Brother Johnson set up the feast days with the creation calendar and on the true time, but Yahweh credited that with, these are your feast days, your new moons, and he says in Isaiah 1, through the prophecy of Isaiah 1, away with them, I no longer can stand them, get them out of my sight, okay, because they weren't, Brother Johnson didn't use them and teach how to sanctify the congregation with the obedience to them, so therefore they become an abomination unto the house of Israel. The Catholic Church has this to say about it. The new law has its own spirit and its own feasts, which have taken the place of those appointed in the law of Moses. If we would know the days to be observed, we must go to the Catholic Church, not to the Mosaic law. From the Catholic Catechism, published in the Signs of the Time, November the 4th, 1919. So Brother Johnson is writing this in 1970, and most all of this meets its fulfillment 30 years later in the year of 1999, year of 2000. And so we can look back on it now here in the year of 2016, and we can see where this met its fulfillment in 2000. He, Satan, has deceived them, blamed, benumbed their sensibility, and planted his hellish standard right in their midst, and they are completely deceived, that they know it. They know not that it is He. 2 Timothy 4:40. Men who stand in very responsible positions at the heart of the work are asleep. Satan has paralyzed them in order that his plans and devices may not be discerned, while he is active to ensnare, deceive, and destroy. 2 Timothy 4:39. The record shows that this covenant was trampled to the ground during the Dark Ages, but in 1833, Elohim called William Miller and gave him the following commission. For it is time for this everlasting covenant to start its work of the restoration, by which a righteous nation, the 144,000 Israel, would be developed. So this prophecy is perfect now for the year 2000 to start, whereas it was written 30 years earlier. And I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and unto every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, Fear Yahweh, and give glory unto Him, for the hour of His judgment is come, and worship Him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. Revelation 14:6-7. This message was preached by Miller for 10 years as a warning of the coming judgment. And on the Day of the Atonement, October 22, 1844, the hour of His judgment struck. And now it says, in 1845, Adventist was born, the father of the 12 tribes, Israel, 144,000, and henceforth, the governmental system, the covenant, the Levitical laws, are being fully established to govern the purified church, 144,000. Therefore, we have already established that the church, being held by a nation, is the 144,000. We have here established that the church, being held by a nation, is the 144,000. So, the church is being held captive by a nation, and that nation is talking about the Assyrian nation. Remember, at the head of our study, he talked about over here about the Assyrian. So who is this Assyrian, and what brings his downfall? So this Assyrian then is the Antichrist, is the Seventh Day Adventist Church, and the nation that she's holding captive is 144,000. Okay, now the plot begins to clear up somewhat. Therefore, we have hereby established that the church being held by a nation is the 144,000. Who is a nation that the church is under subjection to? Now, when he says the church, most of the time he's referring to the Seventh-day Adventist church. But in this case, he's referring to the 144,000, the purified section of the Adventist Church that's been held by the Adventist Church proper. So now he's asking the question, who is a nation that the church is under subjection to? But he just got through answering it in the paragraph before that it's the 144,000. All right, let's read now to see what his answer is. To answer this most vital question, let us first consider the location of the headquarters of the Seventh Day Adventist Church. Since it is in Washington, D.C., USA, are we then to say that the United States or England is that nation, Assyria, that is holding Elohim's people in subjection? Let us examine some facts, because we have a religious political situation here to deal with. What does it mean by the words Assyria's fall? Okay, so if that's the case, if the Adventist Church is holding 144,000 captive, so then they are the ones that fall at the appointed time as the Assyria falls. So Schwartz prophesied this as the closing work for the Adventist Church is the sealing of 144,000. So there you are. Therefore, thus saith the Yahshua Messiah of hosts, O my people that dwellest in Zion, be not afraid of the Assyrians. She says, O my people that dwelleth in Zion. In other words, translated into the language that we can understand it now is, O my people that dwellest in Zion, within the framework of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, in other words, residing within her walls, be not afraid of the Assyrian, that is her governing officers, that general conference officers that run her. He shall smite thee with a rod, and shall lift up his staff against thee, as the men of Egypt. For yet a little while, and the indignation shall cease, and mine anger and their destruction. And it shall come to pass in that day that his burden shall be taken away from off thy shoulder, and his yoke from off thy neck, and the yoke shall be destroyed because of the anointing. That's the Assyrian yoke. Because of the anointing of the house of David, and the anointing of his servant Antipas, Elijah David. Isaiah 10:24, 25, and 27. For example, this fall of Assyria, we only have to consider the fall of Babylon in 1844. Then shall the Assyrian fall with a sword, not of a mighty man, and the sword not of a mean man, shall devour him. And he shall flee from the sword, and his young men shall be discomfited. Isaiah 31:8. So he said, for example, this fall of Assyria, we only have to consider the fall of Babylon in 1844. Okay. Well, then that would translate into Antipas, the Babylon of today then would be the Adventist Church that represents the Assyrian yoke around the purified church of Nathan. That's 144,000. That's holding 144,000 captives. Alright. For through the voice of Yahweh shall the Assyrian be beaten down, which smote with the rod, Isaiah 30:31. From the above evidence, we can plainly see that the fall of Assyria is not brought about by the war of nations, but by the voice of Yahweh, a message. Okay, it says, for the work of reform had been carried forward through the Sunday keeping organizations. Babylon, a work of spiritual restoration of restoring truth, which the Babylon had trampled to the ground during the Dark Age. But it was now time to start the work of the reestablishing of the everlasting covenant, Leviticus 23, of which the Day of the Atonement was the first Sabbath restored, October the 22nd, 1844. For the end of the 2300 days prophecy, the second feast that was restored was the seventh day Sabbath in 1845. Therefore, a Sabbath-keeping body, Israel, was raised up to continue the work of the restoration, for the second angel's message had been given, announcing the fall of Babylon, which showed that Elohim was no longer to use her. She suffered a spiritual fall. Likewise, the fall of Assyria is spiritual. Pethiotis says she suffered a moral fall. So that was a moral fall of Babylon. I don't know if that means the same thing as spiritual or a fall of Babylon, but it could go with it. If such sins as this are to come, such tremendous judgments on a guilty world, who will be the refuge for Elohim's people? How will they be sheltered until the indignation be overpassed? John sees the elements of the nature, earthquake, tempest, and political strife represented as being held by the four angels. These winds are under the control until Elohim gives the word to let them go. Here is the safety of Elohim's church. Test runs the ministry full force. Since this political strife is held by the four angels until the 144,000, the church is sealed and particularly united with them, untouchable, as pointed out in early Revelation 15. They are the stone cut out of the mountain which breaks in pieces the nations in Daniel 2 and Elohim's battle axe in Jeremiah 51:20. Now here Brother Johnson is calling the 144,000 here this little stone that's hewn out of a mountain without hand and breaks it in pieces and the nations, Daniel 2. Well, you know, that stone, you know, mountain without hand, is a singular term, a figure or a symbol of one person, the stone, not a group of people. I know Peter talks about those that was following Yahshua into Jerusalem. And he went to Jerusalem on a donkey, and they were admonished to hold their peace. And Yahshua said, "These stones would verily cry out if these others were to hold their peace." So he's talking about more than one stone. But here in the Bible, it's talking about this one stone. The stone is a symbol of David. This David is this one single character. Like the David of old, single-handedly, one person went and defeated the leader of another kingdom. It was a one-on-one battle and won, and so therefore causing then the whole army of the opposers to be defeated. So likewise it will be today. It will be one person. He said, "The fall of Assyria is caused by Elohim's people casting away their idols and turning fully unto him. For through the voice of Yahweh shall the Assyrian be beaten down, which smote with a rod," Isaiah 10:31. "Therefore, as there is no political strife against her, while she, the 144,000, turn unto him, it shows that the fall of this Assyrian is not caused by war. This Assyrian is the one who is holding Elohim's people in captivity." So that would have to be then the general conference leadership of the Seventh-day Adventists. That is holding the 144,000 in captivity, just like of old, when Moses was in the palace of the king for the first 40 years of his life. He was under the power of the palace of the Egyptians under King Pharaoh. Okay, so the people were... they were enslaved, they were in bondage under Pharaoh. And Yahweh raised up a deliverer, Moses, but they had to wait 40 years for Moses to be old enough and mature enough, both physically and spiritually, and experienced enough in knowledge and wisdom to deliver the children of Israel. And sure enough, he proved that at the age of 40 he was not experienced enough, being raised solely in the palace king and the palace of the king of Pharaoh for 28 years of his 40 years life. So shows right there that Moses' mother trained him for the first 12 years of his life, and then she had to give him to Pharaoh for the next 28 years of his life, and that proved to be the wrong type of training for someone that is being trained to lead Yahweh's army. You have to have someone that is fully trained in Yahweh's army, not mostly trained in Pharaoh's army, like Moses was. So Moses had to go out herd sheep for 40 years and unlearn everything he had learned so that he'd be capable then of leading Yahweh's people out of Egypt, in which he did. So it says the Assyrian is the one who is holding Elohim's people in captivity, preventing them from worshiping Elohim and according unto his command in Nahum 1:15. Who are these idols that cause Assyria to fall? For the idols have spoken vanity, and the diviners have seen a lie, and have told false dreams. They comfort vain, therefore they went their way as a flock. They are troubled, because there was no shepherd. Zechariah 10:2. The first thing brought to view in this scripture are idols that can speak. But instead of speaking the truth, they speak vanity. Worthless are sources of self-satisfaction. The next thing brought to view are diviners that have seen a lie. Okay, so Verlis Johnson, he stood in the pulpit many, many years and telling things that he says supposed to be that he got them from Yahweh, but he divined them his own self, and they constitute the diviner that divines a lie. Anything contrary to Elohim's word, and had told false dreams, or Verlis Johnson told plenty of false dreams, false interpreters, so Verlis Johnson did that, they try to comfort, bring consolation or hope, but in spite of their efforts, they fail. Next we see that the flock goes their way, but they are troubled because there is no true shepherd, no true interpreter of the living spirit of prophecy in their flock to announce the judgment for the living. Well, besides, 1970 was pre-judgment of the living, and Roland Johnson thought it was the real judgment of the living time had come, and so therefore he's showing the Davidians and the Seventh-day Adventists that up to now they have not had anyone that had given them the true interpretation of the spirit of prophecy and to announce the judgment for the living soon approaching and given a time frame when it would come. And Roland Johnson didn't even know the time frame until it shaped up in 1970 after he got the creation calendar restored. Then he figured out the time had come then for the spirit of for the judgment of the living to begin right after he got the calendar published. So he says, "Mine anger was kindled against the shepherds, and I punished the goats. For the Yeshua the host has visited his flock, the house of Judah." So his flock, the house of Judah, was in captivity unto the house of Esau at this time that he visited them in 2002 at Kermit, and hath made them as his goodly horse in the battle, Zechariah 10:3. So he comes and visits his flock, and he takes the leader shows him a new leader, a new husbandman, and places him in charge of his goods, and put him over his house, the law of the house of Judah, and made him his goodly horse in the battle. Okay, so it says made them as his goodly horse. Them is a plural pronoun, but no, goodly horse is one. Who is this goodly horse? So he's asking the question, who is this goodly horse? Well, he just got through telling us that it was his people. The house of Judah was this goodly horse. Just got through telling us. Now he's asking, who is this goodly horse? This is the second time he's done this this type of procedure in this trap. He tells us the answer, then he asks us the question. Second, first he tells us the answer to the question he's fixing to ask. Who is this goodly horse? Now turn, lift up mine eyes, and look, and behold, there came four chariots out from between two mountains. And the mountains were mountains of brass, and the first chariot were red horses, and in the second chariot, black horses, and in the third chariot, white horses. And in the fourth chariot, grizzled and bay horses. The black horses are then go forth into the north country, and the white go forth after them, and the grizzled go forth toward the south country. And the bay went forth and sought to go that they might walk to and fro through the earth. So they walked to and fro through the earth. Zechariah 6, 1, 2, 3, and 6 and 7. These scriptures bring to view four chariots coming out from between two brass mountains. purified churches. Four chariots and five teams of horses. The first three chariots had only one team, while the fourth had two teams with two different characteristics. One a true color, a bay, the other a nondescript grizzle. Leaders in the scriptures are represented by the horses. Therefore, the grizzle and bay horses represent two different leaderships of the church to church. As there are only four chariots between the periods of the two brass mountains, purified churches, the fourth and last chariot, the one of today, thereby brings to view a struggle between two leaderships over the church. The grizzled horses, being the lead team, has control of the church, and it is compelled to go where the lead team goes, which is to the south country, Egypt, wilderness. As the bay horses are attached directly to the chariot, they are trying to prevent the grizzle horses from taking the chariot down into Egypt by sending her messages of reform. So the chariot then must be the church, calling for revival and reformation as called for in Nehemiah 1:15. Okay, so now see, Brother Johnson is calling for a revival and reformation for the Adventist church that he had come out of, formed his own church, and now he's harking back to the Adventists and he's saying, now we need to have a revival and reformation in here. Okay, Zechariah 6:7 brings to view that the bay horses started going to and fro through the earth, and as the time came, the command was given, get your hands all to and fro to the earth. So they did as they were commanded. What happened then? Just this. The grizzle, the lead team, was cut off. How? O Judah, keep thy solemn feast, perform thy vows, so the wicked shall no more pass through thee. He is already cut off. Nehemiah 1:15. For the time is come that judgment must begin at the house of Yahweh. If it first began at us, so shall the end be of them that obey not the gospel of Yahweh. See Leviticus 23 and 1 Peter 4:17. This sad and glorious event is also brought to view in the following quotation. The church has turned back from following Yahshua, her leader, and is steadily retreating toward Egypt. Yet few are alarmed or astonished at their want of spiritual power. Doubt and even disbelief of the testimony of the spirit of Elohim is leavening our churches everywhere. Satan would have it thus. Ministers who preach self instead of Yahshua would have it thus. The testimonies are unread and unappreciated. Elohim has spoken unto you. Light has been a shining from his word and from the testimony, and both have been slighted and disregarded. The result is apparent in the life of purity and devotion and earnest faith and knowledge. 5:2-3:17. Here we see that the church, the Yahweh's sanctuary, were the first to feel the stroke of the wrath of Elohim. For the ancient men, those unto whom Elohim had given great light and who had stood as the guardians of the spiritual interests of the people, had betrayed their trust. They had taken the position that we need not look for miracles and the marked manifestation of Elohim's power as in the former days. Times have changed. These words strengthen their unbelief. And they say that Yahweh will not do good, neither will he do evil. He is too merciful to visit the people in judgment. Thus peace and safety is the cry from men who will never again lift up their voice like a trumpet, to show Elohim's people their transgression and the house of Jacob their sins. These dumb dogs that would not bark are the ones who fear the just vengeance of an offended Elohim. Men, maidens, and little children all perish together. 5:2-11. That's testimonies. Volume 5 of Ellen G. White. Here is brought forth the fact that there is to be a judgment for the living in the church. Now see, that there is to be a judgment. This is future, tense language. And that he, ancient men, leaders, are the first to be judged. This judgment is a fulfillment of Ezekiel 9, which is the result of the disobeying the command given in Nahum 1:15 and Leviticus 23. the mark of the man in linen, which started 3.5 years before this destruction. Paul's prophetic history shows that the investigative judgment started at the atonement of 1970 and will continue for the ancient men before the house until the atonement September the 6th, 1973, at which time the sins or names will be brought out of the Lamb's Book of Life. As the Isaac Branch message is the antitle of 3.5 years of the Savior's ministry, and as he instituted Yeshua's supper on the night of the Passover, at which time Judah went from them, never to walk with them again, likewise with the institution of the Yeshua's supper at Passover time, 1974, the grizzled horses leaders will be cut off, no longer to be in her midst. The purified church, 144,000. Well, if that were the case, Brother Johnson represented the grizzled horse leadership from 1970 on, so if they were cut off in 1974, then that is a prophecy, an indirect prophecy right there to show that Brother Johnson, when he made that false prediction of 1974, then he was cut off at that time, then, according to his own mouth, he was cut off. Brethren, what is the Yahweh's admonition to us? Blow the trumpet in Zion, sanctify fast, call a solemn assembly, gather the people, assemble the elders, gather the children and those that suck the breast. Let the bridegroom go forth out of his chamber and the bride out of her closet. Let the priests, the ministers of Yahweh, weep between the porch and the altar. And let them say, spare thy people, O Yahweh, and give not thine heritage reproach, that the heathen should rule over thee. Wherefore should they say among the people, where is their Elohim? Joel 2:15-17. So it's easy for Brother Johnson to project that the grizzled horses would be cut off by 1974, when he's writing this tract in about 1971, 3 years before that time. So it's easy for him to prophesy that the Adventist Church leadership is going to be cut off at that time. And this tract that he's made here, the judgment beginning in 1970, on the front of it is this chart. And it's this chart, this 3.5 year chart, which he's showing a judgment scene on the top picture, and he's calling the judgment of the dead, 1844. And in the bottom, he's calling the judgment for the living. But he don't have no date on this judgment for the living. He only has 1844. For the beginning of the judgment for the dead. But here he is saying 1970 is the judgment of the living, but he don't put it up on the chart itself directly. He puts it underneath there. So he's saying, there's a 3.5 year period here. This is the chart that he showed me to prove that there's going to be a 3.5 year period from 1970 to 74. And that we would go through this door right here where probation closes for the Adventist Church. We would go in through there representing the 144,000 first fruits. And this is a tract that he showed me when he started this prophecy in 1970 to culminate 1974. Alright. At what time should this be done? Also on the 10th day of the 7th month, it shall be a day of atonement. It shall be an holy convocation unto you, and you shall afflict your soul. You're the fast, in other words. Leviticus 23:27. The days that are calculated for you in creation calendar are not from the Jewish or the Gregorian calendar, but from the astronomical and biblical time. And that day shall the branch of the Yahweh be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth shall be excellent only for them that are escaped of Israel. And it shall come to pass that he that is left in Zion and he that is remaining in Jerusalem, church shall be called holy, even every one that is written among the living in Jerusalem. Isaiah 4:2-3. So, in essence, Brother Johnson, he put a 3.5 year prophecy at the beginning of this, of the 40 year period for Gilead Center. And that 3.5 year prophecy came to its fulfillment 30 years later in 1999 and year 2000, not in 1974. For the day of the Yeshua, the host shall be upon everyone that is proud, and lofty, and upon everyone that is lifted up, and he shall be brought low, and upon all the cities of Lebanon that are high and lifted up, and upon all the oaks of Bashan, SDA leaders, and the idols, he shall utterly abolish. Cease ye from man whose breath is in his nostril, for wherein is he to be accounted up? Isaiah 2, 12, 13, 18, and 22. In the day of the branch, judgment of the living, so then that would have to fast forward this prophecy up clear to 2002, because this is when the day of the real branch arrived, starting the judgment of the living in the beginning of the 12th parabolic hour with the Elijah David as a husbandman of the vineyard of the house of David. The violators of the law of Moses, Nehemiah 15, Leviticus 23, will be cut off from her midst. Church purified. So, Gilead Center was purified at the Atonement, 2002, just like this prophecy was made in 1970, prophesied. It took place 33 and a half years later. Okay, so there's a 3.5 year period that he prophesied from 70 to 74. It took place starting in the year 2000 and ended in 2002. That's it coming. The Assyrian yoke, the nation governed body that is holding Elohim's people captive, will be broken. And that was the house of Esau, then was translated as being unidentified as the final part of the Assyrian yoke that was holding Yahweh's people, the house of David, the first fruits of the harvest, in captivity. For how long? 33 and a half years. The exact same time of our Savior's ministry. Now, isn't this amazing how 33 and a half years translates into 42 months, and 42 months, and 33 and a half years with a 24-hour day translates into the 144,000. Anyway, let's go ahead. Well, actually, we're at the end of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11, click on our audio archive. We will close now with a song. End of our study this hour, contact your 11th hour call and close the service now with a song entitled "Let the Heavenly Light Shine Through" by Elijah Davis, a song that I wrote. Well, you would not have known about a woman for y'all if you hadn't created you. But not alone about his vast creation and all that he can do. So draw near unto y'all, remember to pray, let the heavenly light shine through. And y'all in his mercy when he comes again will have a heavenly home for you. Let the heavenly light shine through. Let the heavenly light shine through. When his mercy when he comes, he will have a heavenly home for him. There would not have been a creation of earth if Yah had not come down. He spoke the word, all creation heard, and the world started spinning around. He spoke the word, and the light appeared. He divided it from the light, and Yah saw that his blood was good. Created by his mind. Let the heavenly light shine through. Let the heavenly light shine through. And all in his mercy when it comes, then we'll have a heavenly home for you. Well, you climb upon a mountain and you look around. There's a green valley below. There's a moon up above that's a shining as a block. There's a peaceful river that flows. There's the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and all the heaven can stir. And the thing that this is just a glimpse of what's awaiting over there. Let the heavenly light the heavenly light shine. Let the heavenly light shine.